and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 589, and here's a voice you probably haven't heard in a while. It's me. It's your boy, Skyler. I'm back. I had a nice long break. Well, I wouldn't say it was a break. I was in school. But before I get into what I've been up to, let me introduce who's going to be joining me on the show today, and that is none other than our very own Derek Cabrera. Derek, what's going on, man?
Not too much. Got through the holiday season all right, and we're in the new year, and we're doing well.
Nice, nice. How were your holidays, man?
They were good. My brother was here from Utah, saw him, saw my sister-in-law, so yeah, it was good. A lot of family in the house, and no complaints. What about you?
And you're out in New York now, right?
Yeah, I'm out in New York. It is bone-chilling cold here. We're about to have a very large snowstorm the next, 3 days. So, it's East Coast weather.
Very nice. Well, I was, as everybody noticed, I had an absence from the show for about 3-4 months there. I got packed into some really hard classes for school. Well, hard for me, maybe not for some other people, but I put in the work. I was putting in probably 19 hours of homework on the weekends, and then just out, studying in between my classes during the week. But I ended up getting done. I aced my final, which aced the class. So I was really excited about that because this was the one class when I went back to school I was really afraid of.
Nice, dude.
And so right now, since I've gone back to school the last couple of years, I've been holding that 4.0. So I'm, pretty happy with that. And I had to take the break, though. I wouldn't have been able to deliver. And I just want to throw a big thanks out to you and all the guys. You guys totally held it down. The show has been amazing. And big kudos to you all.
Nah, man. Kudos to you. 4.0. We got an Einstein over here. Congrats, man.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. But, my holidays were fantastic. For Thanksgiving, we all went up to my parents' house. They're about 2 hours north of me, and went up there and had a good time. And then for Christmas, they came down here and went a big family gathering with my in-laws and some other people. So we had about 15 people gathered around in the house. So that was really nice. And then for New Year's, we all took turns being sick. We've been passing around some super bugs in the house and at work. So we spent a good 5 weeks. I remember we were talking about trying to do a show after Christmas, and, man, we were laid out with the flu here. So. Oof. That was not enjoyable, but it's good to be back. It's good to be on the show, and this show, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be dedicated pretty much, well, not pretty much, it is going to be dedicated to Moto America. That's all we're here to talk about. Me and Derek are just going to have a conversation of what's going on, what's good. We're kind of breaking format here a little bit, we didn't pull up any listener feedback. I don't think there really has been. We don't have the donators list. We just kind of wanted to jump on here and talk Moto America a little bit about last season, but more importantly, what's been going on in the off season, because this off season has been more interesting than I think last season complete. Wouldn't you agree, Derek?
Yeah, there's been an actual silly season, and it's really exciting. I'm excited about the upcoming season and what's been happening, but I don't know if you want to talk about 2018 and how you felt about that before we get into the off season. I thought 2018 was a solid season for Moto America personally. It was some growth. We still don't have a ton of manufacturers, and that's a bit of a bummer, but I think the racing up front has been quite good between Tony Cameron and Josh Herron. Those guys really had some really good battles. I think it was Road Atlanta. Both races there were just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was, Road Atlanta was the race where Josh was running.
Was it Road America or Road Atlanta? I think
Road America, I think you're thinking.
Yeah.
Because in Road Atlanta, it was his opener. Cam crashed in the first three laps, and he took himself out of the race. So he dug himself a deep hole, which he seems to kind of do almost every year.
Yeah, right.
And then he did a wonderful job and pulling himself back up and getting those wins, especially towards the end of the season, to cap up another championship for the guy. But Josh Herron, man, this guy this season, I don't know what switch went off in his head, but he turned into this whole different beast. He's a media monster. He's got celebrities looking at Moto America. He's the guy Moto America has needed so bad. I mean, you've kind of got everything now with Moto America. You got the perfect, military cut, says every right thing, goes out there and dominates on a motorcycle, Cameron. Then you've got kind of like his heel, Tony Elias. He's not from here. You know, he comes in, he brings a little bit of attitude and heat. These guys are monsters on the track, but off the track, they're still pretty good. And everyone super respects. And then you mix Josh. Josh is the wild child. He comes in, he does all these crazy videos online. You know, he's bringing up, he's got like the Coors backing kind of thing going on. He's bringing, it seems like a lot of people maybe who weren't interested in Moto America or maybe just motorcycle racing in general. He's bringing a lot of spotlight. And, you know, he's had a great offseason, which we'll get into. But him coming in, showing up, you know, not even, he didn't even bitch and mope that his bike, you know, the trailer broke down on its way from California out to Road Atlanta. Nope, he just said, oh, it's okay, I'll go grab my street bike, you know, borrow some parts, and went out there and just wrung its neck. Like, this guy did an amazing job this year. And, you know, he definitely deserved where he's going next year. But that to me was like the highlight of this year, was watching Josh Herron turn into this, you know, not only he's been a super fast rider forever, but he's turned himself into almost a celebrity of the sport.
Yeah, agreed. And I think his weekend at Laguna Seca too, like that, you know, he was trying to put in a superhuman effort, and it's a shame he really didn't get the finishes that he deserved, I feel. But I mean, trying to run four races on one motorcycle, and then the physical effort that takes, like, yeah, he was certainly super impressive. And I don't think it's news that, you know, he's signs with Yoshimura for next year, takes Roger Lee Hayden's spot, and I 100% well deserved.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit about how that all came together as well. There's some interesting tidbits to there. But just anything else you wanted to cover in 2018 before we kind of move on? Is there anything you wanted to say? What was maybe your most surprising moment? Maybe what was slightly disappointing? Maybe what was unexpected or good? Anything?
Sure. Yeah, let's do like most surprising moment and then like disappointment.
Cool.
I'd say for disappointment, I guess it's just from a personal and like from a fan standpoint. Like, I wanted to see Roger, you know, really battling at the front more often. And, yeah, you know, he's had a ton going on, you know, personally. And you know, he's just at the end of his career, and maybe he didn't have the fight. You know, there's probably a million things going on, but I would have loved to see Roger go out with a bang and really fight for the title. So I was a little disappointed in that just from a fan's perspective. But, you know, he's going out there every weekend, putting on a show, doing his best. So you can't fault that. And I'd say I think I already said the highlight moment was Josh Herron doing the double with World Superbike and Moto America that weekend. Like, it's I was like super excited to see that, and then to realize it's literally just one bike, and they have to, like, all the settings from the Dunlop tires to the Pirelli tires, trying to learn all of that, and, you know, be competitive. And he was fairly competitive, wasn't he, running inside the top 10 in Superbike for a while, and then he should have had a podium in Moto America, and I think he crashed out. So but just the effort, just the way that he got the team to do that and was like, I'm gonna do this, was just super impressive. And I think that was one of the highlight moments for me.
Yeah, you know, Attack really stepped up. They gave everything Josh wanted. They built an amazing motorcycle for him, and a lot of that was handcrafted goods. But yeah, I think to add on to your Laguna there, I think what he was running, you know, in the top 10, but then kind of faded back, eventually ended up pulling off the track, and he just said, because he had already done like a race, and he's just like, nah, man, I'm wiped out, and I've got more of a championship fight over here in Moto America that I need to put some attention to. And it definitely cost him, I think, in all of his races.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
You know, doing everything basically kind of made you a jack of all trades and master of none at that point. Like, he was fast and everything, but just, you know, maybe if it was just qualifying for everything, cool. But yeah, he definitely had a hard time. Just, man, I don't know who would be able to do that except for maybe Mark Marquez.
Yeah, right?
Because he's such an animal.
Yeah.
For me, the highlight of the season was seeing Josh bring the street bike out, like I was talking to Road Atlanta, and run that thing. And I was like, dude, he's going to suck so bad. And he just gets up there and it's wet. He's got a shot. He just held it with the factory bikes and on a bike that, I mean, there's guys out here that I've ridden with in the hills that have a fancier, more decked out bike than that. And, you know, he's just out there crushing it. And it was impressive. You know, for me, the downside, you know, wasn't any particular race or anything. It was just kind of a disappointment of, again, you know, the grid size is hurting in Moto America. I know we beat this dead horse over and over again, but it is really one thing that can hurt the sport is not having enough people out there, and not just having enough people, but enough competitive people. There's an article, I want to say, because Broster Chicken, we know they've now left. They're no longer with Moto America. They closed up shop. And there was a great article by Danny Walker. I think I linked it on our Motopod fan page on Facebook, where he goes in and talks about how the electronics basically ran them out of the door. And it wasn't how you normally think, like, oh, it's just expensive and you need to work on it. He went into great detail and length of explaining, like, okay, well, we had these electronics, and even the guy from Magnetic Relay couldn't make them work, and we had to bring in a guy who had been working on these at an extremely high level to the MotoGP teams use them, and pretty much everybody who knows those electronics goes to this guy, and they had to spend all this money and resources, and then the electronics changed again, and it's like, oh, man, that had to be a brutal hit to take. And you also got to see how, you know, over in BSB, they run the MoTeC electronics, which apparently are much more simpler but more refined. This is the more important part, that they work. And you can find people who know how to work on them. And so, you know, exactly, I would say that Moto America definitely needs to take a page out of that book, step back, and maybe, you know, really roll those electronics back, because it seems like that's the make or break point with a lot of these teams.
Skylar, you're reading my mind. You know, after reading that article too, like, and just... I finally, now that there's the off season, I've had a chance to like watch the BSB highlights that we get here in the States, and like the racing is just so good, and
with so many people too. Exactly. It's not just three or four guys. The guy who finishes 17th in race one weekend could be on the podium the next. It's insane.
Exactly. So to think that the biggest difference is that electronics package, and the teams over there don't have to spend as much on electronics, because I think in the article too it goes maybe it wasn't that article, but it's like the I know the Yamaha team, the factory Yamaha team here, was looking at the data from the factory Yamaha team in World Superbike and trying to understand their electronics setting, and because they're all on the same system, but still it's a huge investment. And you know, Honda didn't necessarily have that this year for Broster to piggyback off of. They were still setting up their electronics with the Magnetic Relay system and all of that. So, I mean, to think on the world stage, those guys are having to spend all that money, and there's going to be 18 bikes on the grid next year in World Superbike, you know, and the biggest cost of that is electronics. So, like, or one of the biggest costs is having all those data engineers and everything. How do you expect a small domestic series that's trying to grow every year to be competitive like that? I think Moto America could do something like BSB and make their racing way more competitive. But at the same time, I think Wayne Rainey and Moto America are also trying to draw a stronger parallel between, like, Moto America's is basically what World Superbike is. We have the same setup. So, you know, it's just like a stronger connection to the world stage. I think that's what they're going for. But at the end of the day, if there's not enough teams on the grid and there's not enough manufacturers supporting a budget to help those teams get on the grid, then I think it may be something that they need to rethink.
Well, not only enough teams, but enough competitive teams, right? Because let's face it, most weekends in Moto America, it's four bikes.
Very true.
Two Suzukis and two Yamahas, and that's at best. Sometimes it's just three. But this series has made its backbone, for sure, is made up of privateers. You know, Attack for has been there for years. When we had Mean Motorsports, he was bringing a lot to the sport, and he kind of backed out because of the cost for what he was doing and wasn't getting out of it. And now we've lost, you know, Danny Walker's. And these are all strong teams, and they were backed by big sponsors. And, you know, they need, if you know, given, look at the Westby Racing, you know, look at, you know, these guys. If we roll it back to where their packages could be competitive, they've got the riders. I mean, racing be that much better. Even if our grid was, let's say it's 15 bikes, if all 15 bikes, you know, have a shot at the chance, and then no one's even going to notice.
Right? Exactly.
Because you're like, oh, man, this is crazy.
Yeah, it's like when I think you touched on it, like there's the talent on the grid to make it a really interesting race. You know, you have Westby racing with Matthew Schultz. You have, I mean, give Danny Eslick a competitive bike. Watch him like dice it up front with Josh Herron. I would pay very good money to watch that. But, you know, it's like they're all on privateer bikes. There's, you know, I think Kyle Wyman, he runs his own team. He does all the logistics of it, and he has to go ride and race and do all that stuff. So it's like there's only so much one person can do, you know?
Exactly. So, you know, that's, you know, I'm hoping, you know, Moto America is continuing to move to that. I know they do listen to a lot of people, and they've been very good about trying to adjust the series as best as possible. I think moving, getting the twins in there and getting that kind of racing and getting that gets a lot of local and clubman stuff into it. And that's super important, too. You don't want to just be an unreachable series, an unreachable goal. You want to be accessible to everyone who races motorcycles, right? And there's guys who are very talented that just ride twins, and, you know, they could be noticed by something else. There's a lot of kids out there, especially when they brought in, you know, I'm so glad they switched out from the KTM Cup to the 300 class and Match World Superbike there, because that just opened up the floodgates, man. People were coming out like crazy for those races because it's an affordable access point, and you could bring your own sponsorship. Those KTMs, they were like the most expensive 300 you could purchase already.
It was like 10 grand.
And there was limited quantities. Yeah, and there are limited quantities around here. Not every, you know, state has a KTM dealer. They're kind of, you know, they're like Ducatis out here. They're very, you know, unique. But Honda and Kawasaki, everywhere. Everywhere, you know, so that was definitely a plus. So, you know, it's constant work. It is constant work. I think they do a great job of, you know, reaching out, making adjustments. And I'm hoping this year, you know, I already know we're going to get better racing this year. There's not a doubt in my mind what's coming up, because, you know, let's just move on to Josh Herron. He's going to the Yoshimura team. That's major. Josh is a very good rider, very fast rider. And he's going to give Cam and Tony all they want, because he was doing it on a bike that clearly was a step below. And that's no diss to Attack. They're a privateer team going up against Factory Efforts. And they were, you know, way behind on development last year, as it was.
Yeah.
And then Herron gets that ride. Oh, man, he's going to be scary this year.
Yeah, I think Josh's biggest... One of his biggest enemies is himself. And I think he tries to do too much sometimes. Agreed. And he ends up on the floor. So hopefully we can see him with a more level head. I think he made a big jump this year. Obviously, you know, through the social media, through connecting with fans and people outside the sport, but I think also in his riding, I feel like he didn't crash as much, right?
Yeah.
Maybe aside from that Laguna round. But I didn't feel like he was trying to deliver too much. And I think that's one of his biggest, when you watch him ride, you're like, he's on the limit. Is he over the limit? And, you know, he falls off in the past. So hopefully with Yosh, he just has a competitive bike, so he doesn't have to override it, but he doesn't make...
Right, this goes back to, like, Johnny Rain World Superbike. Everyone's like, oh, man, that guy just crashes a lot. Then he gets on the Kawasaki and pulls away. It's like, oh, the Honda just sucked. Yeah, and he had to override it all the time. So Josh hasn't been on a factory bike since, you know, way back when he was Josh Hayes' teammate.
Yeah, when he won the World Yamaha Superbike team. Champion. Or not the World Super... when he won the AMA Championship AMA. Previously. Mm-hmm. Before Moto America. But, yeah, I mean, I just think back to his Moto 2 days. You know, I remember him... you know, he was going to go into Moto 2, and I was super pumped as a fan. I was like, great, we got another American on the grid.
Yeah.
And he just crashed out of like every single race because I feel like he was just trying too hard, you know?
He was trying hard.
He also had
definitely
like
had some bonehead moves.
Yeah. He also had a new bike in Johann Zarco's. This is his teammate. So, you know, he's obviously going to try to. He's got bigger fish to fry with that. But anyway, that's, I guess, where my perception of that stems from. And I've seen it carry on through Moto America, but hopefully with Yosh, he can continue what he's built on this year, because I think this year has been a huge progression, and I'm so excited because he's not afraid to get his elbows out.
No. So that the way this all came about, too, is a bit strange. Buddy of mine, he tapped me on the shoulder one day. He's like, let's go have dinner. There's another podcast, Greg's Garage, you know, Greg
yeah.
White. And, So he's got a lot of good insider information. Greg is, you know, on a different level of friendship with most riders than any commentator I've seen in most paddocks. He goes out and like, trains with these guys and everything else because he's a former, you know, rider racer and guys really respect him. And so he, now if I recall correctly, and I may be getting my information wrong, but I digress. He was saying that JD was actually lined up for that Yosh seat.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was kind of like a last minute move. Because if you remember, you know, first it was Josh jumped on to the Yosh. And then it was almost like JD, you know, JD already found out about it because it was pretty early on. And then JD had signed with Ridiculous Racing to run the 600. And just take a second with that. Man, that was a big old facepalm. I hate to say it. No slight to Ridiculous Racing. Just the fact that JD didn't get a superbike ride, I was like, oh, come on. Like, this guy's got to get out of 600s. He's got a ton of talent. And then he, you know, then it's like, oh, okay. But then, like, the next day later, it's like, oh, you know, Tack Racing's like, oh, here's our new rider, JD Beach. And I was like, oh, that about seals it up. Yeah, we know Josh where he's going.
Yeah. Worst kept secret of any announcement in a good long while.
Mm-hmm. And so, no, we get to see, you know, Josh, like, cool, stamped, it's on, you know, they didn't, like, announce that till, what, like, a week and a half ago that he was joining that team, and everybody kind of knew for the last month and a half that he was joining them. They were testing here at a track not too far from my house over at Thunder Hill, and they were running around, and I might have had some birds giving me some information that he was out riding that thing and riding it quick, so.
I
say Josh is going to be, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I had a great story from a buddy of mine. He has a friend who works at Yoshimura, and as a joke, my friend's a club racer, so as a joke, he signed a picture of him and sent it to him and said, Merry Christmas. And the day Josh Herron got announced on Yoshimura, his friend took a picture of Josh with my friend's holding my friend's picture, and he was like, you know, great job, and I just lost it. But yeah, it was like the same day that, you know, the announcement was there, but... Yeah, I'm glad to see. I'm basically Josh with Yosh. I think is great. I would have loved to see JD on that bike, but the fact that we're gonna see JD on a superbike is, I think, incredibly important because I think another season in 600s. Yeah, I would. You know, you're pounding your head against the wall. It's like this kid deserves to be on a superbike, and I can't wait to see him because he has that point and shoot style that he was using on the 600s, and it's going to transfer. It should transfer perfectly to superbike racing.
Absolutely, and you know, and JD is doing something different this year too with this Edson Racing. There, he's doing the flat track as well. So he's doing flat track and superbike. So, you know, he's going to be double dipping. He's going to be putting in the work. You know, hope he can stay healthy and safe on both because both are extremely dangerous. But, you know, I want to see him be competitive, especially on the superbike. We know he can go fast on a dirt bike. We know he can go fast on a 600. But we don't know if he can go fast on a superbike because the last time he rode a superbike was at Kawasaki. What was it? For Cycle World. Man, this had to be, like 2011? Something like that. And it did not go so well for JD.
This is not on my radar. Please expand on what exactly happened, Skylar.
Well, so actually, if we want to back up to a little bit of personal opinion, Cycle World wanted to come in and sponsor and run this team. They actually wanted to put Cam Bobby in. I think they almost had him signed when he was 16 years old and put him on a superbike. And AMA stepped in. They're like, no. That's he's too young. Let's not. And my own personal belief, I was like, man, these guys, you know, I know they want a fast rider, but you're going to kill this freaking kid, man. Like, you got to give them some time. Because at that time, Cam had done, like, one season on the 600.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, dude. Like, and, you know, there is a jump. And 16 years old, you're barely figuring out yourself before you can figure out, you know, 200 horsepower monster. Flash forward, I think it was the following season, they kind of got, you know, with the Kawasaki, because I think at that time it was with the Suzuki. They put JD on that bike, and JD was fresh off the 600 championship here as well. I'm not sure if he won the championship that year or if he was running up close, but that's kind of when the AMA had a good strong win. All these youngsters, like, you know, JD, Cam, Elena Myers, all of them were on the 600s at the same time, right? JD got on that Kawasaki ride and proceeded to crash in, like, almost every other practice and every race. He was just tucking the front because, you know, first of all, it was once again, it's that whole thing where the bike wasn't as good as packages, and the guys running up front, he was trying to keep up, but he was also trying to hone his craft. And this was causing all kind of issues. He actually ended up injuring JD, and it knocked his confidence back. And that's why when he actually went back to the 600s, he wasn't that strong at first, and it took him a little bit to get going. And obviously, he turned into the rider that, you know, we get to see now. But he had to kind of get back from injury and everything else. So
he ended up doing a full season on a superbike?
You know, if I remember correctly, he didn't finish the season because he got injured. And I think Bobby Fong took over that season. Okay. Now, I could be completely wrong because we're pulling back. I mean, Skyler's not a Harry. I can't sit there and start quoting shit from years ago and naming every sponsor on the helmet kind of thing. That's just something that stuck with me through the years. I remember kind of being a little upset about that because, you know, I started, this is when I was also more involved in the paddock and I was working with some youngsters too. And I was feeling like, you know, I was like, you want a strong team. I understand. But you also need to protect your riders, and putting them out like that and throwing them to the wolves when you got guys, you know, like Tommy Hayden and stuff out there riding. It's like, do you need to back it up?
Yeah.
And speaking of Tommy Hayden, man, that was like the ultimate just kind of leeway. He's actually going to be the, I think the team manager or racing coach.
I think it was
VP
like
VP of operations.
Director of racing, I believe. I think it is.
Yeah, there you go.
At Edson Racing, right?
Yeah. So he's basically going to be there, you know, leaning on JD's shoulder like, all right, buddy, this is how we're going to ride a superbike. Ready? And kind of much like Jake Zimke has been to a lot of the guys in the paddock. So these guys that have stepped away from racing for a few years are definitely finding themselves back in the paddock with great positions. And don't be surprised if Roger finds himself back there pretty quick as well.
Yeah, I mean, just based on his social media posts, I can't see Roger being away for too long. So hopefully we'll see him back.
No. I feel like he's going to get bored.
I know, right? I mean, you think about these guys, like they spend their entire lives like always having a goal, always having something, always traveling around, and just to sit at home, you know, I don't think a lot of them do that very well. So, it's only a matter of time.
Yep. So we've got another transplant coming back, and that's PJ Jacobson. With one asterisk, it's going to be on the 600. Oh, man, this is exactly what we just talked about with JD being on the 600. Like, I was like, PJ's coming back on the 600? Like, okay, man. Like, give us maybe 1 year on the 600, then get on a superbike. Like, dude, you need to be on a superbike, bro. You're fast.
I think that has to be his plan. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to see PJ on a non-competitive superbike, you know?
Yeah,
right? So I think he has a more realistic shot at the title in 600s being on a privateer 600, which almost all the 600s are going to be this year because Yamaha doesn't have a 600 program now. And it's just basically just a factory.
There's no factory.
I mean, they have the Suzukis with Valentine, right?
Yep.
So,
oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, basically other than that, I mean, and even that I don't think is, you know, full factory. So
I forgot about Mr. DeBees because he's there, and then Hayden Gillum's gonna be strong on the Rick Nicholas Racing. PJ should be pretty good, and then you know, PJ, you know, the one thing I remember, I think I was talking with who was I talking with that about? I don't know if it was you or if it was Jim, but when Gagne and PJ had announced that they were going to order a superbike, and then we saw the package they were on. First off, it was a Honda, so that was kind of scary. But then PJ was running with was it Triple M, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I was afraid of two things. Like, one, like, this is not a package that's going to show off his talents, and if he's not up front and top tenning that thing, you know, this could go either way. It's either he's going to override that bike, and everyone's going to be like, man, he did what on what? No way. Let's bring him onto a good bike. Or he's going to be spit out the back, and he's like, eh, he's nothing. Yeah. And unfortunately, it was kind of the latter of it, where it was his bike wasn't there, and they were doing a bunch of testing. And I'm telling you, I should probably try to find a link to that article, because this is explained, too. Like, Triple M was part of the whole article with Danny Walker and electronics, and the Honda World Superbike team was part of all of that talk as well. This is a huge thing. PJ being there, and it's like,
it's a pretty shit season for PJ and Jake to be on the Honda and on the world stage, because they were just developing the electronics the entire time. PJ was like on developing the Magneti Marelli system from nothing, and then Jake got it halfway through the year, and they had to, it was basically like he was restarting the season halfway through. So
And he had picked up an injury or two by then as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then if you're going to try to back, you know, compare their results versus Camry results, please don't, because that's like saying Johnny Raven's on the Honda. You give Camry a good bike, he's going to kick some ass. So, you know, roll that back. You got to remember how dominant he was in BSB. So, you know, Jake and PJ still honing their craft. But Jake, what, you know, what's he going to do? I don't think he's announced anything. He's obviously still been training. I see him on the dirt bike on Instagram all the time. But
yeah, from what I heard, he's going to be in the Moto America paddock. And there should be some information within the next couple weeks, but I don't know if he's going to be in the superbike paddock. I would assume so.
Please.
But I think we are going to see him on the grid next year. So,
man, I need to win the lottery. I'll just go get some Kawasaki's and go get some guys and go pick up PJ and Jake. Like, come on, let's do this.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. One can only dream. But anyway. But yeah, man, 2019 is looking good. We had a good silly season. It's definitely not done because we don't, you know, the big seats got moved, but, you know, what's still going on? I think Skultz is still going to be with the Westby team.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with, like, Eslick and what's going on with, I just mentioned his name and I'm having a total brain fart. Bobby Fong. You know, what's going on with Bobby Fong? Another strong rider. What's going on with Jake? You know, what are we going to see?
Yeah.
You know, there's still guys in other sports that don't have their, or excuse me, sports. Other series that don't have rides as well that may be looking at Moto America and maybe putting something together and trying to figure it out. And,
yeah, I think that's the interesting thing about Moto America is, like, you know, the season doesn't start until a little bit later. The silly season's, you know, still going on because I think BSB is the preferred paddock for a lot of those world guys. But at the same time, you know, all those seats are taken up right now. So it's if there's still some surprises left to happen, I think. So that's going to be good. One thing I am interested in the super sport category is Sean Kelly is coming over from the Red Bull Rookies after a couple years over there. He's with he's with Team Hammer on the 600. So
I'm strong team.
Yeah, so that's going to be really interesting to see how he progresses. One on the 600, two in Moto America, if he can compete up front, because I think towards the end of last year on the Red Bull Rookies he was fighting, you know, further up, probably for like from 5th to 7th place, but he also was trying to compete with the Anchu twins, so he had quite a lot to contend with. But that's one thing that I'm interested in that we don't have on our notes, because Team Hammer is, like you said, is a super strong team. You got Chris Ulrich there, and I think that could be really exciting too.
There's the kid who trains with Josh Hayes and Melissa Paris. I think it's Corey Ventura. He's stepping up to 600, I think, next year as well. So that could be another guy who's real fast right out the gate. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of people making some moves, and we're gonna have to do quite a bit more waiting before I think we see how this grid in both the superbike and super sport class are gonna look.
Yep, I think so as well.
But all in all, you know, Moto America, they're moving in the right direction. But I will say this, you know, it's hard to say this, but I do think it is an important thing that this may be a make or break kind of year for Moto America. They've got a lot of the right pieces in place, but they're going to have to get this grid size up. And most importantly, I glossed over this, and when I say this, you'll be like, oh, yeah, what are they going to do about TV coverage? Because
Ian still not got
picked up. Yeah, by Verizon or Comcast, and that's going to really hurt not only them, but World Superbike and MotoGP coverage. That's all one package.
Yep. Yeah, so I think because they just released a press release a couple days ago, and Wayne Rainey said that Moto America will be responsible for all of their own coverage. Not necessarily, they're still working with a TV provider, and that should be announced within the next couple weeks, hopefully. But they're going to be on the coverage. So I don't know if that means they're going to try to pull a Dorna and, you know, have their own, broadcasting streaming as well as, you know, take care of all the film crew and, you know, they're going to have the say in that. I think that's another extra huge undertaking if Moto America is going to be totally responsible for that. So I think that was a little unclear from the press release that I read. But yeah, you know, figuring out, you know, what channel it's going to be on is really important. I think NBC Sports has taken on a lot of the motorcycle racing, right? We have flat track on there. We now have Supercross on there. And some of the Supercross races are broadcasted on are going to be broadcast on NBC, not NBC Sports. So that's huge.
Supercross just did the unfortunate thing of bringing back Ralph Shaheen.
Yes, I know. I know.
And they didn't bring back Emig. I know. What the hell, man? You brought Ricky and Shaheen? That was who you brought over?
I know.
So done with that.
I was like, okay, it's on NBC Sports. We'll see who the announcers are. And like, as soon as it started that first Saturday, I was like, ugh, Ralph Shaheen. Yep. But they got Ricky Carmichael.
Gale Force wins. Martin's? I think it was Charlie Cox. That was his version of Ralph Shaheen, I think, that he couldn't stand, right?
Yeah. But man, yeah, I had the same exact reaction. But anyway, regardless of the announcers, I think it's really good for that series to be on NBC. I don't have any insight into what's actually going on, but I think NBC may be tagged for Moto America if I think their programming now kind of lines up with it. So
yeah, they also have quite a few channels that they can kind of hide things on, and you know, maybe stuff that doesn't get out to many people, and then they can move them around. Like, yeah, you get your qualifying over on NBC Sports 2 or something, but we show the race on NBC Sports, and then the one big race at Laguna Seca for the year will bring you on to the main NBC channel or something at a different time slot. They've got the flexibility to do that. That's kind of what CBS did with them when they had them for a few years there, when it was CBS Sports, and they may even go back to that. You know, there's always that option. Anything, of course, is better than nothing. We got lucky last year when Comcast bailed on BN, and BN was like, okay, we'll just unlock everything on YouTube now a day later. It's like, oh man, that was huge.
Yeah. But
that's good for people like me and you who've grown up with the internet the whole time. People who are used to, like my dad, who just, you know, go to the TV and watch stuff. You know, my dad's not going on YouTube to watch racing. And there's a lot of, that's a huge part of their audience is guys have been riding, because let's face it, I don't think the younger generations are looking at motorcycles the way that, you know, growing up how I did. I don't see nearly as many sport bikes around my house anymore. And this used to be a hub for sports bikes.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But yeah, I think, you know, like that press release said, like they're taking over all filming and in a streaming package. I think it said something in there. I don't know I don't know. Maybe I'm misquoting it, but I think it'd be very smart if they did have some sort of package like MotoGP does, like World Superbike does. Now I think Formula One started to do it last year, where they have an online package. So I think
they did, and it was okay.
Okay. Well, I honestly don't follow Formula One that closely. But I think that's the way, that's how we're consuming media nowadays. And I think that's especially the way we're consuming sport nowadays. So I'd be really surprised if Moto America doesn't offer that through their own website, or it's not offered on a better package than it was on BN on their website, you know, on the new TV provider's website.
And speaking of which, that's something they also need to be careful with, because, yeah, you can have a subscription package as an option. What are you going to charge? You know, you can't be out there with MotoGP prices, which, dude, MotoGP.com, if you break it down per month, it doesn't feel as bad. But I think it's gone up in price again. We're to the point where it's like $14 a month, or because it's not a full year, it ends up being like $15 a month, which is still, I'm more than happy to pay that. But, dude, it's just climbing. To the point where it's like they're going to find that ceiling eventually. People are going to be like, nah, that's okay. Because, you know, if you go out there and get like the, you know, what was it, Fubo TV there for a while when you had BN, you could watch all three for one price. And even that now went from like, it was like $12 when it first started. It's up to like 38 or something like that.
I remember Fubo TV a couple of years ago. I had it for like $9. And then I like canceled it because Moto America was over. And then I tried to re-sign up and the cheapest package was still like $17. And I was like, well, I guess I'm getting the Spanish package with like all Spanish channels and then BN, because that's all I want. So yeah, and now the cheapest package is like $30. It's crazy.
Yeah. And they've added more stuff, but I mean, that's the kind of the downside to all these, you know, packages now, because NBC Sports, they did that with Supercross, speaking of which, where their main race is on TV, but if you're a diehard Supercross fan and you want to watch practice and all that, you got to buy the package, and it's like $75, and Supercross is like 3 months long. It's like, ooh,
yeah,
okay, that's getting up there.
I guess what's at least nice about that, though, is that you also get the whole NBC package. So
true.
There's more stuff on there. So hopefully you're a sports fan, I guess. But MotoGP.
We got to be.
Yeah, they definitely have to be careful with the price tag, because, yeah, MotoGP nowadays is steep. I don't even look at what the price is anymore. They just charge my card. I get hit with that foreign transaction fee.
Because it's in euros, man. Yeah, yeah. So it's even worse when it gets to
us. I know, it's terrible. But,
it's
yeah.
Like 130 just, euros. Oh, shit, 150 yeah. bucks, okay.
Yeah, you just suck it up. But, yeah, man. You know, doing that World Superbike and then another one with Moto America. You know, maybe they keep doing the YouTube thing. I think that was really solid for allowing people to watch it and to be able to go back mm-hmm. and digest the sport a little bit more. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm really interested in it, but I think that's a huge component to it too. Not only the racing, not the teams, not the manufacturers, but also being able to actually watch it. Because if it's difficult to watch, no one's going to watch it.
Exactly. And, you know, convenience is key, right? So that's another thing. It's up to, you know, a lot of the fans too. If they're doing the YouTube stuff, get out there and share it. Put it links up. You know, people are going to see it. People might see a trailer for something. Check it out. That's always a good thing. And then hopefully they can get big enough one day. We're complaining about, you know, how much money it is because there's so much content. And we're like, but, keep doing the good things. It's definitely moving better than it was when it was under the DMG flag. That's for sure. Because it would have been dead by now.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
So, but you know what? I think that's a good enough show. It was good to be back. Unless, you know, you want to cover anything, I guess we'll just kind of wrap it up here.
Yeah, no, I think that hits the key points of Moto America for as it stands on January 17th of 2019. But like Skylar said, you know, there's still going to be a couple more announcements, a couple more people add to the grid. And I'm excited for the 2019 season.
Yep. And, you know, the big T word's coming up. Testing is coming up. It's coming up soon.
It's coming up on all fronts.
January, folks. Yeah. You know, January is it, folks. We just kind of got to get through January. And remember, when February hits, like, there's already been some testing. And then we get World Superbike at the end of the month. And it's like, oh, boy. We are back out of the cold depths of winter doing our thing. So I'm excited to see that. But don't forget, though, in the meantime, you can reach us and email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. One of the hosts will get to you. We're really good about responding these days. Lynn's really good on there. Andrew's really good on there. I chime in from time to time. Derek will throw his words around. Jim, of course, is always active on there. So give us a shout. What do you like, not like? What do you see coming up in the future? Get some discussions going. Get some material so we can do some of the more of these off-season podcasts. We're probably going to get more so back to a regular schedule now that everyone's kind of had their holiday break. So let's get on that. You can also get us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/motopod. That is the Motopod fan page. You know, I'm pretty active on there these days. I'll throw some links and I'll throw some opinion pieces up there, get people discussing things. I'll probably pull some more questions from that. That's always a good one. Then, of course, you can hit us up, you know, on Twitter. That's @moto_pod. So follow us there. We get our news and banter. We throw links on there. I'm also on Twitter. You can find me there @SkylarV28. Derek, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter, Instagram @MotoDerekC.
Perfect. And of course, our other host, Andrew Course. He's @Andy_Course. You can find Jim @MotoRGV on both Twitter and Instagram. I think we're going to have to slide Dave Neal from part-timer back to host on the sheet here because Dave has been holding down. And Dave, thanks for not only stepping in and filling in this year, but for also, man, he's going to be, you know, joining and talk with Andrew. Really, really enjoy those shows. We get a lot of good feedback from fans. It's great to have Dave on here. Dave's a veteran in this show. He can pretty much do this with his eyes shut without looking at anything. He has more knowledge than I think most of us do, especially on that side of the pond.
Man, those...
And you can find...
Those shows with Dave and Andy are fantastic. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't know what's going on in BSB. So, but one thing I am excited about is I'm going across the pond this year, and I should be able to make it to a BSB race. So I am very excited about that.
Yep, you get hit up Dave.
I got to hit up Dave, and I can hit him up @DaveNeal on Twitter and @TheDaveNeal on Instagram.
man, it was so smooth right there. I was going to do it, and you just slid in there. I'm going to say we ended right there. I don't think it can get any better today.
Sounds good to me.
All right, folks. Until next time, I'm Skyler. That's Derek. We'll catch you later.